Além.
Rolling, 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 leave that paper rolling. Misty.
Chee-haw.
Bring him up, bring him back, bring him out,
coming out. Grand Mistress and Julianne.
Okay, who is our treasured reader today? Oh, looks like I see a court going over towards...
Karen.
Karen.
Oh, yeah?
Well. Well.
Proximal chance. Page number, date.
Page 409, I have.
Oh, yeah.
The story of the Grand Mistress and Julienne. Overture. 23. In the past, before choosing to embody yourself as an abiding being, many of your personal gifts, capacities, and awarenesses were either denied or jealously guarded as secret knowledge and abilities, or left languish in the belief that such awarenesses and brilliance and empowerment could only be realized by masters or great teachers, and offered to a well-chosen few. Do you see and understand the problem with this? You couldn't rise beyond an ordinary loner self in life without the awarenesses that only masters or mistresses can realize and live. In other words, you couldn't be extraordinary without being extraordinary. But now, your choice to be and live as an abiding being in an abiding life of enhancement and happiness with others, living loner body selves and lives, reveals your mortal and soul readiness to fully guide and enhance yourself and others. Your time has come. Your personal master or mistress, your own soul, is awakened and aroused within you. But unlike many masters and prophets of old, the outward expressions of your mastery and abidingness may be indistinguishable from what is ordinary. Yet in that, you will be extraordinary, remarkable, and majestic, and blessed. Many will see you, few will understand you. Your life and well-being are about to change. The Grand Mistress and much about Julienne. Gesundheit. Now, as promised, we will tell you of an incident in Marie's life many years earlier as the Grand Mistress. Actually, this is the story of two women.
Can't hear you.
Do you have the red pen?
One was a teacher, counselor, and healer. A Grand Mistress who... typo.
I'm trying to get the red pen.
After who, period. Because of her wise and expansive understandings, had achieved the unusual status in life of being respected by both men and women, which was exceptional because at that time in Greece, women were idolized and adored, even glorified and deified for their beauty, love, compassion, and forbearance, and for their softness and tenderness, but seldom for their wisdom and understanding of worldly matters, or for their teachings and preachings. But this story concerns one such exceptionally wise and honored mistress. Her given name was Selden used. And my screen is doing crazy things. Hang on. Her given name was Selden used, so we will only call her the Grand Mistress. And get rid of that on my screen. You know her as Marie. So in the side, it says loner body self, the DNA body.self your parents created for you to come alive in, and they loaned you that body self.
You know, maybe when we have like body.self,
mm-hmm.
because what we're trying to show with that dot is communion.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah,
say
yeah.
Body communion self.
Ah, right, okay.
Right.
Okay.
What do you think?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
No answer, Roger?
No, that's right.
Okay.
One day outside Athens, A woman named Julienne, who had made the long journey from France to Athens, pushed through the crowd of people listening to the Grand Mistress's teachings and boldly asked, "Oh, Grand Mistress, you have so much wise learning, so much knowledge, so much understanding and ability. Will you not give some of that to me? Oh, teach me, please, so I can be like you and minister to others as you do, and teach them. Oh, please, please help me." The Grand Mistress, hearing Julienne's desperate pleading, looked intently at Julienne, replied gently. "But, dear one, I have nothing to teach you. I have nothing to offer you. Oh, I can give you nothing." "Oh, but dearest mistress," Julienne protested, "how can you say that? I heard the profound and caring, the very wise things you said here today, and I believe what you do. I've seen the healing abilities and insights you possess. I know the understandings and truths you carry outside of yourself, inside of yourself. I recognize the profound depth of your concern and awareness. I've watched how you care about others and truly live your teachings. You're compassionate and loving. Oh, I see it all so clearly. How can you say you have nothing to teach me? I have heard that ancient people lived more than 100 years, and some masters today live even longer, and it is said that you know the secret of long life. Obviously, you have much to teach me to overcome nature." "The physician, dearest one, is a servant of nature, not the master, and a trained healer is one of the divine blessings of humanity. Are you certain you are willing to live up to such a role?" Oh yes, I promise I am. Our profession has extended life to older citizens without providing even a glimpse of dignity and security or hope for the future. Are you willing to deal with these problems of old age? What makes growing older hard to bear is not failing health and abilities, it is the burden of their beliefs and memories. Those are extremely difficult problems to heal, but it must be done. For the people who hold tightly to ancient beliefs and thoughts are tightly bound to disease and illness. These sick concepts must be cleansed and healed before the body can even be treated. Can you do that? Will you do that? Because the health and well-being of the state depends on the health and well-being of its citizens. Oh, in healing, you have the state in the palm of your hand, and you have to make health and well-being as catchy as illnesses are. That's an important responsibility for any citizen. In their illness, your patients fear two fateful possibilities. One is to grow older, and the other is not to.
Another one for dying, not growing old.
Life, dear one, is a ceaseless creation, and all things are involved in this continuing process. For life uplifts and advances the strong and changes or disposes of the weak. For life uplifts and advances the strong and changes or disposes of the weak.
There you go.
Got it. Therefore, to be actively engaged in this work as a healer or patient is to take part in your own development and realization, and your personal unfoldment and destiny. Are you ready for that? Are you ready to stop struggling to prove yourself and begin anew in right attitudes and actions? I wonder, are you truly willing to avoid unworthy behaviors in individuals and situations? I'm not so certain of that either. Wise individuals, in order to greatly and appropriately influence others, accept and learn from all that is at hand, and expand that. For true success is only achieved through correct understandings and actions in harmony with self and the true nature of all things. You must avoid obstinance and all forms of deviousness. In this healing, you are to awaken and inspire, not incite and thrill, and certainly not show off or indulge in trivial words or behaviors. Are you prepared for that? I wonder. You must be discerning in all words and actions, and constantly be alert to changing circumstances to properly guide others to their healings, and to their abiding self and life of well-being. Always be willing to explain, but never justify yourself or your words or actions. This is critical. In light of all this, can you remain confident and sure? For what your thoughts and feelings are focused on and act upon is brought into existence. Patience and circumstances await your decision and guidance. Are you certain you are ready and prepared? You must never engage in or lead others to unimportant or shallow or petty beliefs or endeavors. For where these beliefs and thoughts and attention is directed and devoted, the heart, body, and abiding spirit will follow, and situations and relationships will respond accordingly. All power and circumstances must be creatively and desirably guided and directed, and your own and others' strengths and opportunities must be protected from depletion or loss. Can you exercise control, power, and authority, and influence gently yet firmly? Following directly the knowledge and wisdom of what is genuinely true, right, and lasting, without contradictory beliefs or thoughts? Your ability to deal with patients and situations correctly and straightforwardly requires a profound depth of knowledge and commitment, and strength from which to count upon and draw from. Can you properly see and acknowledge self, regardless of the results of your teachings and healings, dear one? True healing and success are achieved through understandings, preparing the way, and assisting to bring into existence that which lies unseen, unknown, and unexpressed. In this, you participate hand in hand in creating life beyond what has been created. This is a truly worthy but difficult existence. When others turn the focus of their lives as you guide them, your responsibility is tremendous. Can you carry that burden without fail or weakening, and know when to remain calm and firm and silent, so as not to feign authority or concealing doubts? Oh, yes, Grand Mistress, Julian replied a bit too hastily. And follow through with all commitments and promises to serve others? For enriching success depends on understandings chosen and acted on, not merely spoken of and promised. For your thoughts and images do not usually outpicture completely or correctly. Let go of old, unreasonable, or stubborn beliefs, attitudes, and expressions, for it is not wise or necessary to prove or justify yourself, your knowledge, or your experiences and abilities. And above all else, dear one, you are not to create any dependence on me. You must take these teachings and rely on yourself as the source of all truths and realizations to act upon. Do you promise this? I do. Oh, yes, I do. I do. This is vital, dear one, because in the future, very soon, you will have a need to remember this promise. Then the Grand Mistress shaded her eyes from the harsh glaring sun and smiled gently, spoke quietly so only Julienne could hear. Dear one, if you understand all I've said, whatever do you expect I could teach you? Well, I understand everything you've said, so you could teach me how to do all these things. Then looking expectantly at the Grand Mistress, Julienne smiled broadly, for she was well pleased and satisfied with her answer. But the Grand Mistress declared, if you really understand these things, then go forth and do just as I do them, and trust me.
Go forth and do things.
Do things, singular plural. Then go forth and do these things.
Do things just as I do them.
And trust me, it will be given unto you. But I can't, Julian answered quickly. I've tried. Oh, many times I've tried, but I can't do them. It just doesn't work out for me. Something's wrong. Oh, terribly wrong. Oh, please, please help me. Teach me. Very well, the Grand Mistress replied. Follow along. Come on my journey, and we will see what we will see. Maybe, just maybe, there's something I can show you. We'll see. Oh, Julianne was overjoyed, and she felt especially favored because the Grand Mistress seldom accepted special students. Well, when the other students heard the Grand Mistress accept Julianne as a special student, there were quite a few whisperings among the students, and a few not so subtle or quiet complaints. And so the two women traveled along together and talked about many things, and shared a great deal. And the other students followed noisily behind, still whispering and complaining. And though they tried to conceal their disappointment, the Grand Mistress knew they were acting like spoiled children. And she smiled knowingly and continued speaking with Julianne while carefully watching her spoiled students. Both women garnered many fruits from this close relationship, and Julianne happily used her abilities to help others when the Grand Mistress gave her great and unusual things to do. But each time Julianne did those things, she felt she did them only because the Grand Mistress gave her the power to do them. And when Julianne complained about her own abilities, the Grand Mistress replied, "Trust me, it will be given unto you." Then she immediately sent Julianne off alone to help others. But no matter what Julianne did, the computer didn't respond. It seemed the power was no longer upon her.
Power was no longer upon you.
Mm-hmm. It was lost or taken away. So she rushed back to her Grand Mistress, who solemnly asked, "Well, dear, what did you learn?" And Julianne shamefully cried, "Oh, Mistress, I learned, oh, that I don't have the power inside me." "Oh, yes," Julianne sobbed, "I trusted you. But when I went away, I couldn't do those things, not all alone. And I promised others and gave them hope, as you told me to do. And then I confidently told them to be at peace, for I will do these things for you. But I couldn't help them. I no longer have the power. What can I do? Oh, tell me, please, what can I do?" The Grand Mistress frowned, but reassuringly said to Julianne, "Well, come along with me for a while longer, and we'll see about this. But I fear the problem is that you misunderstood my words." And the Grand Mistress took Julianne's hand, squeezed it reassuringly, smiled tenderly, and directed her down the road. And again they traveled together, with Julianne right behind the Grand Mistress, carefully watching her teach and heal others. And in seeing how easily and effectively the Grand Mistress relieved their suffering, Julianne's heart was torn in two, because she couldn't help others as the Grand Mistress did. Then, at other times, the Grand Mistress said, Now I'll stand behind while you do these things yourself. And Julianne did them, and everything was just fine. Everyone was happy that Julianne could work and heal and teach and relieve suffering so well. And the Grand Mistress, being pleased with Julianne and her ability, said again, "Now go away and show others what you have to offer. Teach them what you've learned. Be gone. Go heal and inspire others." And Julianne dutifully went away in tears, feeling rejected and abandoned again, and unloved and unwanted. Lost from her own Grand Mistress, and she couldn't help others or even show them, properly so, what she'd learned. For when she left her teacher and mentor, her Grand Mistress, the wondrous power, as she called it, also left her. So Julianne again and again rushed back to her beloved mistress, crying, "Oh, why do you ever send me away? For surely you knew I wasn't ready to be on my own." And the Grand Mistress explained again and again, "Julianne, in all matters of life, your guides, your God self, and the truth and wisdom within you, even your own awareness, will at times say, 'Be gone,' just as I did. And it truly hurts. We're not abandoning you. It's our way to avoid creating or allowing any dependencies. And while you do as you've been instructed and know to do, we will stand firmly behind you, guiding you, protecting you, and at times supporting or even carrying you. Now you must do the same with others. Dear one, the Lord's words, trust and it will be given to you, does not mean to have faith and it will be done for you. It's God's promise to give unto you exactly as you give unto others. For what you offer others is exactly what you are choosing for yourself. God asks that you select and accept his gifts in that way. For by living with others, with yourself, and with God in that way, you will truly have an offering from God and the universe, or as a fine gift from yourself, and everything you need to fulfill that promise in abundance. However, if you do not live that promise in trust, then your desired gifts and offerings and the things you most dearly want will be forsaken from you.
Okay, I got a question. So are we looking at Grand Mistress as Eternal Self and Julianne as your loner self, going back and forth and communion? And then I guess...
That's one way.
Okay.
It's a good way.
Okay. I was thinking of as Julianne's off on her own, doing these things, trying to do these things, or feeling she doesn't have these abilities, I was thinking there's going to be times in my life where I got to take care of life business, and I'm living pretty much from the focus of my loner self in life. And this story seems to be telling me that even in those times, I may not feel that awareness of communion, but I guess I haven't lost anything or something. I guess there will be times where I feel like I'm cut off. That's what I'm getting so far. Not in that communion directly.
I think sometimes when we get into the everyday world of doing that,
yeah,
it's really true.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it.
So I thought it was interesting what they said about creating a dependency. I never thought of it. You can create a dependency on that conscious communion with Eternal.
Especially if you're looking for it for all the answers.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Thought it was worth asking.
Oh, Grand Mistress, Julianne interrupted. I understand. This is my promise to others.
Trust.
Trust is my promise to others. Thank you. And in making and bringing forth those sacred promises, God will give me all I need, won't he? Oh, yes, I see. I didn't wait for God to work through me, did I? No, Julianne, you didn't work through yourself. The Grand Mistress was explaining emergent to Julianne. So remember, if God can only give to you as you choose and act, would it be any different for them, your patients? Did you teach them to heal themselves? For in that, God will give them just as they choose and act upon that choice. Do you see? Oh, yes, I see. I truly do. Then can you ever expect to give to others, even if they are in desperate need? Oh, no, they must choose and give to themselves. Isn't that right? Oh, yes, dear one, it is. You must teach them to give to themselves. Oh, Grand Mistress, I'm so confused. Will I ever have God's assurance to give me what I need to help them? Am I blocking that? What am I doing wrong? Are my doubts too strong? Oh, do I possess some secret unwillingness to live my desires and promises? What's wrong with me? Am I so undeserving? Whatever did I do that was so unforgiving? Julianne doesn't understand emergent. Julianne, when helping others, you must pledge, trust me, and it will be given unto you. Make that promise to them, through your words and actions, just as it has been revealed and given unto you. But I did that, and it didn't work. I couldn't heal them. Yes, Julianne, you did. You spoke the words. But for you to give them to them, they must choose what they will have from themselves. So look closely and carefully and wisely at them, for you are their image and inspiration. So be the finest ever. And teach them that they alone are their own promise, fulfillment, and enrichment, their own healer. Teach them to live that to the fullest for themselves and for God. O Grand Mistress, I understand, I do. Many who were ill prayed to God and promised, if healed, they would change their lives and faithfully serve Him. But they weren't healed, and I couldn't help them. They surely promised. I heard them. What was wrong? Doesn't God care anymore? Were they evil sinners? What was wrong? But Julianne, their promise was to change after they were healed. But they weren't willing to change to heal. So their real choice at that time was to continue as they were and do nothing, wasn't it? Oh, yes, Grand Mistress, it was. So it wasn't my fault at all, was it? No, Julianne, it wasn't your fault, but you didn't help them either, did you? Well, no, but that was their fault, not mine. I had nothing to do with that.
Julianne doesn't understand the urgent.
Still.
Right.
I love that story.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I sometimes look at what we just happen to be reading. I think that's appropriate read to the read person, the reader. This was about healing. I was just thinking about what you're talking about today.
So, now we're moving on to the life and legend of Akima.
I want to ask a question real quick. Roger, when you said it was one way that we could look at it, that Julianne's relationship with the Grand Mistress, what other ways might we consider that story?
How would you like it?
How I would like to consider it.
How or what?
Well, he put back on me how I would like to consider it.
Well?
It's a good question. I only thought of that one way so far.
Oh. I hear a noise. I'm trying to figure out what
Tape.
It is.
Oh.
Yep.
Oh, I see
it's
from the microphone.
It's on the table.
Yes. Amplifying that.
Okay.
Just well, I guess the short answer is...
isn't going crazy.
Yeah, no. I'll think about it and get back to you. I didn't quite figure them out, but I see a pattern there I can apply. Oh, I know. The neat thing I thought about that was, I think in the past I've always been looking for, like, answers in these stories and things. And what I saw there was just a scenario. It's just information, awareness that I can apply in my life to know where I am or what I'm doing. Sometimes I'm being dependent. And all the information that she's telling Julianne is... to keep in mind. But there's not an answer in there. That's just an awareness that I can use to live my life. That was a different awareness for me.
Great thing about teaching and responsibility.
Huh?
What?
About teaching and responsibility.
What about it?
Well, it just how she taught Julianne, and then it just explains every little step on what to tell someone. And I keep saying, I understand that. Well, then you have it, you know. And then the responsibilities that she had with what she was telling. Just so practical, I think. Like.
I think the main thing I got was she said she understood, but, you know, in applying it, in living it, she didn't. Mm-hmm. And the main thing I think I got from that was that maybe she thought she could heal other people, but they had to do emergent. They had to live the constituents. And if they weren't doing it, then she judged herself. Maybe she wasn't making them sufficiently aware of their own... relationship in the like in life, how you say it, they weren't doing the things to live healing.
In fact, she was doing what she complained or the Grand Mistress pointed out in the end, saying the words but not I will change my life after I'm healed. So she was declaring, Julianne was declaring, but her action wasn't consistent with her declaration.
So wanting healing but not living the constituents, wanting to be a teacher or a healer or a wise person, but not doing those constituents.
She was forcing the dependence on the people she was healing on
and
her.
And the master, grand mistress.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She was not.
So I see you. Yeah,
not teaching emergence in full to others, you know.
Yeah.
And the promise is in there too. Promise.
But she ultimately says, well, it wasn't my fault then, was it? And that, I mean, that.
She was talking the talk.
Yeah. So just the, just she's still in fault and blame. And,
yeah. Sounds like she's going to keep at it, though.
Yeah.
We'd work with left hanging what, whether or not what the grand mistress was willing to do.
You know, for that actually worked for me, though, for the first time, because I guess I'm not looking for a conclusion or an answer. That's just
answer. How to do it.
Information there as a
snapshot.
Yeah. It's
somebody
a process.
Struggle.
It's a process. It just leaves it at the process, not a conclusion that you would glom onto.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
It's just a thought.
Yeah. Because, like, that was part of our conversation earlier. What worked? What didn't work? I did X with my patient. Did it work? Did it not work? Isn't that a conclusion and a result? And,
oh, yeah, right.
I know that I did it right. I know I introduced them to their eternal beings because it worked. Their disease went away. Well, that's a little crap.
Could just be symptom relief. Yeah. Want to add anything to this mix, Roger?
What?
Want to add anything to our mix conversation?
It's a beautiful, beautiful story.
Any objections to what we said?
Objections or additions?
No.
I feel sometimes as Julian. I want to know how to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I imagine every healer does.
Instead of listening to myself, how I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then getting them to do it for themselves, showing them how to do it for themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, not.
Mm-hmm. So you could probably apply those understandings to any time you want a consequence in life, whether it's healing others or anything. Apply these understandings about speaking the words or trying to do it for a consequence or living the constituents and speaking that clearly and living those directly. Mm-hmm. Okay. Achina?
Akina.
Wow. What kind of name is Akina? Can I just get some water first? Before you'll give me that responsibility.
We're going to find out real soon when we get into the store.
Okay. Akina. I want to know now. I want to know the end already. Then I can read the script and find it. Didn't know Pat was going to bequeath me with the reading privilege so quickly. This is page, what, 419? Emergent Life 419, the life and legend of Akina. This is the overture. I did it.
Clear throat.
Right into it.
Mental note. Right into it. Okay. 24. At the first appearance of living yourself as abiding, you might be discouraged because you cannot properly determine where you truly stand in your new beliefs and ways and life. Yes, that's true. And cannot reconcile them with your customary views and ways and your old convictions and truths. As a consequence, you will probably struggle to measure and judge and even question. But when your new beliefs and ways, you fully embody your new awakenings and abiding self and life. I think there's something in there.
That's good, though.
This alone will end your doubts and conflicts. as Julianne did, to live her abiding life as Akina. Oh. Your abiding self and life that has laid dormant will enable you to see and judge and understand your own progress and role in the universe, and experience the thrilling happiness and inspiration you have long sought. This begins by your openly embodying and living these new beliefs as an abiding being. Hang on a second. Somewhere here. Okay. Again, thank you. 25. To completely appreciate your abiding self and role in the universe, to enliven others, all begins, as begins, right?
All beings,
with your openly embodying these emergent life awarenesses. And this requires a versatility of mind, character, behavior, and activities. Refine your beliefs and attitudes and actions, but do not confine or limit them.
I thought at one time we kind of gave up beliefs, because you have a belief and you have to back it up. So if you have no beliefs, then you just emergent about whatever happens on that topic.
Isn't that a belief?
Huh?
Isn't that a belief?
To not have a belief?
No, isn't that what you just stated? Isn't that a belief?
I wouldn't say I believe. I'm back trying to back something up. I try not to say I believe and back it up. I have to back it up.
So you believe that's true?
I don't say I believe.
It's an implied.
It's implied. It's a condition. You say.
Oh, we're discussing the condition.
Yeah, but there's. You believe it to be true.
I'm not gonna talk. I don't want to.
I mean, I think we did a Monday night on you don't have beliefs, you have descriptions.
Okay. Well,
and if you live beliefs, that's destroying you.
Yeah.
But can you live your descriptions? But
like getting rid of beliefs, it's not.
Well, not getting rid of beliefs, just recognizing what they are.
This is brought up because it says refine your beliefs.
Yeah, this is for the average person, I think.
It's a process, huh?
I think it's for the average person who, I mean, you're not trying to cover all issues in this book with everybody. This is for new people to Emergent Life Center.
But also beliefs.
I know, but I want to get down to the nitty gritty.
Haven't we always said, have your beliefs, but we'd be 100% willing to change them? To let them go? If
Replace
you say,
them by a new one?
Yeah.
And didn't that say just above here, what is it, about versatility? Oh yeah, this acquired a versatility of mind, character, behavior, and activities.
Mm-hmm.
So it's don't, if you're fixed in any way.
Right. Mm-hmm. Live your beliefs, don't let your beliefs live you.
There you go. That kind of works for me.
Yeah.
All that.
My beliefs, I can do what I want with it. If it doesn't serve me, if I get around to a place where I go, oh, that's an incorrect belief, it's gone that instant. Whereas hard and fast beliefs that we're unwilling to change are the ones that get us into trouble.
Okay. All right. Let's soften it a bit for me.
Good question. Mm-hmm. Akina, Emergent Life, page 420. And there are no section passages. It's just a straight through read. Well, that's the story of Julianne and the Grand Mistress. And it seems that Julianne did finally understand, because in another come-to-life episode, the abiding being that was Julianne lived as a healer of the Oneida, is that how you pronounce it?
Oneida
Indian tribe, and traveled the Hudson River in the early 1600s, seeking members of other Oneida villages.
Healing.
What?
Healing members.
Oh, healing members. What did I say?
Seeking.
Early 1600s, healing members of other Oneida villages, as well as Mohawks, Onondaga, Cayuga, Cayuga, and Seneca villages. Yeah, I know that one. Sorry. As well as Mohawks, Onondaga, Cayuga, and Seneca villages along the river.
All right, we got the gist.
This group of five tribes were also known as the Iroquois Confederacy, which had been founded years earlier by the prophet Daganoweda and his disciples in an attempt to reduce the constant intertribal rivalry and warfare, and even cannibalism, and the Confederacy thrived. Maybe because women frequently held a high status in society.
Yeah.
Such that the tribe's cultural, medicinal...
Gonna get yourself in trouble there, Patrick.
Cultural, medicinal, and material life was the most advanced of the eastern tribes at that time. But despite this, most women raised corn, squash, and beans, while the men hunted deer and small game. Yet there were struggles and deprivations and illnesses in life. At this point, it is at this point that we must tell you that the abiding being who came alive as Marie, the Grand Mistress, and Akina were living an abiding life to determine if the many illnesses and sicknesses that people struggle against were all different or were actually just many forms and symptoms of
many
a single
forms.
Many different forms and symptoms of a single illness that could be successfully treated in one way. And these women were living their abiding purpose to discover a healing treatment and teach others. Now, hang on. This has come alive as Marie. I got that. I thought it was Julienne.
Marie is the Grand Mistress.
And Kima is Julienne.
Oh. Okay. Oh. Okay. Sorry. Akina, a direct descendant of Daganoweda, was born to be a medicine woman. W. Misty typo. Huh. Woman, not weeman.
Not weeman.
Born to be a medicine woman and was raised in a small palisaded Oneida village along the river. But when she received her call from the abiding spirit within her, her name was changed to She Who Knows, and though she studied and worked beside the other healers, Daganoweda. This is just karma for what someone was telling me about today. I have a foreign language to read now.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys.
Yeah,
the master was with. Master Within was said to be the real healer, the one who gave her a true insight into an understanding of the invisible spirits that completely penetrate the visible world. And she was instructed in handling and directing these invisible forces affecting the lives of her patients. She was trained to enter the spirit world and shield people from evil spirits. By rendering the actions of evil forces harmless. And Akina chanted and sang sacred songs to awaken and enliven her patient's inner healing powers, which also quickened and soothed and strengthened them. Akina, being very successful at controlling fiendish spirits, enjoyed great power and prestige in the Oneida tribe. But in answering her greater calling as a grand seer and prophet, she also chose to visit other villages and other tribes. She felt that her power and purpose in life was far too great to be limited to a few individuals from one village. She was determined to carry the good sacredness from one village to another, and from one tribe to another, and she frequently spoke of the great spirits at the village longhouses. Akina bound two canes together. Two canoes together. I'm going to make this a little bigger. I'm not used to electronics. Okay, Akina bound two canoes together such that when sitting in one canoe and carrying her belongings in the other, she became an obvious and familiar sight paddling the currents and eddies of the Hudson River. And though few people knew exactly what she was doing and seldom understood her greater and finer abilities, she was constantly hailed from the shore to help someone in need, for she was fully trained in herbs and healing, as well as in spirit guidance and prophecy. When called to heal someone, she first entered into the greatness to discover the patient's weakness and the harmful forces at work, so she could properly see into the future and foretell that, and prescribe something to hold back or block the evil spirits and create a cure. The greatness definition in the margin is the abiding world. You want another quote on that somewhere? The greatness, end quote?
It does have an end quote. Oh, in here. Yes, I do.
Okay. Today, we call this preventative medicine. But greater than that, Akina could see the problems and difficulties that were rising in her patients' lives. Not just those appearing in their bodies. And she spoke of those things. But her prophecies also created problems. For if the difficulties came true, that proved that her cures and chants and spirit shield had not worked properly. And if the events did not occur, no one ever knew whether she had been right or wrong in the first place. So there was a great risk and many difficulties in attempting to help people in these ways. But feeling it was important that they foresee and acknowledge and understand these problems, and prevent or overcome them in their lives, Akina was willing to risk these difficulties in her own life, simply because she had the strength and ability and dedication to help the sick of mind and heart and body. And when they questioned Akina's prophecies, she responded, "If I and the spirits can do the great things you've heard about, which have helped so many people, would you spit upon all I've said about your future?" Akina had a very logical and rational and forceful way of expressing herself to those who earnestly listened. But those who turned deaf ears to her words and her spirit voices were threatened by Akina. And she frequently imposed tasks and obligations on them, and she even cursed and bedeviled them for their unholy beliefs and attitudes and lack of vision. It was not that she was black-hearted or uncaring. It was just that she saw their fears and knew what they needed most. And her actions were designed to break through the defenses of evil spirits who were causing problems and illnesses. By being stronger than their spirits, she hoped the sufferers would accept and follow her advice. Well, sometimes they did, and sometimes they didn't. But it was important for Akina to present herself and her guiding spirits, so each person might see them acting through her and understand them and draw strength from that. Put new awarenesses into their lives, turn their tapes over, put new awarenesses in their lives. I'm sorry, I lost my place.
Very bottom of the second to the bottom paragraph. Three lines up.
And accomplish cures and worthwhile things in their lives. After consulting with her own spirits and the spirits of those she was healing, by calling up the medicine man or woman in each person, Akina frequently gave her patients a special charge. It was something they had to chant, or do, or create, or establish, or pay back, or offer to another, which quickly changed their life, and it was from this charge, thus charge, discharge, that she declared they would be healed or over. Oh, charge?
This change. Where she gave her patients a special charge.
Okay. Yeah.
She did give charge. Right.
And it was from discharge she declared they would be healed or overcome the approaching illness or misfortune. Pretty wise gal there. Yeah. Most people, fearing her great spirits and doing exactly as she divined for them, found new guidance and healing and direction in life, solved problems and changed life and body, and proclaimed Akina to be a great prophet and healer, which she was. But she also realized that in giving them something to sing or do in a different way, when relating to someone of the family or village, or when working or hunting with another, though they did much the same as they'd always done, now they did these things in exceptional ways, with finer attitudes and feelings, and they answered and followed the callings of greater spirits within them, and everything was better. Akina wasn't guiding them to a new life. She wasn't just predicting a problem or illness and then overcoming that. She was creating a greater, more spirited or abiding and awakened individual. And though they may not have fully understood what she was doing, they soon discovered that by following her instructions and charges and chants to the fullest, they felt better about their lives and what they were doing. And they usually continued singing their own sacred song to arouse and guide and protect them. And in that, they were quietly attended to and healed and maintained from within. Got an extra tilde there. And they often declared loudly at the evening campfire or quietly to each other, "That wasn't so bad. I feel pretty good. Look at me and my life. I killed 2 deer last week and a bear before that. Listen to my song. And if I do some more of this, then I won't get sick or hurt, and that'll be even better. And I'll have the strength and protection I need and the guidance. I can call upon my inner healing spirit. Good spirits are certainly on my side now because I know how to do these things and how to always sing my true song."
End quote.
End quote. Interesting. So this is going more into like the person doing something, like, you know, living the constituents, not just wanting to be healed first. And so patients spoke about their feelings and chanted, and frequently they would brag. But of course, they didn't brag about Akina. They boasted about what they had done and the spirits they had on their side, which made them feel fine and strong and important and able to care for themselves. But that was all right, for in giving her patients a charge to do, Akina was directing them to be completely new and different individuals, not merely the old person acting differently. And the braggarts didn't even realize that they were entirely different individuals than before. And Akina was willing to accept their crowing and blustering as long as they did what she asked and stayed well. For out of this, she was creating a whole new individual. And that was most important to Akina, for she didn't want to heal the masses or cure their many problems. She was directed by her inner mistress to spend her life awakening the sleeping creative spirit or force or abiding being in each person. Such starts life, which starts life and creates a new empowerment in each person, a greater life, and a wondrously different person. And she was willing to devote herself and life to that. It was much more than healing that she was looking for, and bringing forth from each person. She understood their body and life, which she held in her fingertips, and the sacred sound on her lips. But even greater than that, she also saw and knew the nature, spirit, and essence body of each individual. She touched that with her eyes and her mind and her blessed voice. She understood the will. Now, before ending these stories of abiding lives, we must say that Dr. Woodbaker had a long history at other times and other lives of challenging those who had assumed authority over others in life. The abiding entity that was Dr. Baker has been alive as the life and legend of Brother Bull.
Okay, can we go back
legend.
Just a second?
The legend. Yeah.
Go back to the end of the second to last paragraph. She understood the will. What is the will?
Declaration. Promise.
Promise.
I don't know.
The will is really the focus. Will is a type of focus to do.
In the absence of the will, there is no action.
Is that it? Or is it there's always a will? It's just what they're focused on. It might just, their will might just be towards loner body goals and purposes. Is that possible?
How did you want to use that word, Roger? Will.
However the thing reads, that's the way I wanted to use it.
Well, so in context, it was talking about what she understood, their body and life, which held in her fingertips, and the sacred sound on her lips. But even greater than that, she also saw and knew the nature, spirit, and essence body of each individual. She touched that nature, spirit, essence body with her eyes and mind and her blessed voice and understood the will. So I think the will is relating to the nature, spirit, essence body of each person. So it must be in that context.
I think so.
Must be.
I agree.
That's the reason you need to read the context.
Yes.
So when you define it over on the border, you lose that context.
Right.
But I defined it over there so you could go back and read it in context.
Okay. That's like, yeah, I got that. Okay. Life and Legend of Brother Bull, Overture. Did anybody else want to take over? Y'all like, am I reading okay? Not too fast?
You're just fabulously.
Huh?
You're a good brother,
Bull.
You'll make a good brother.
Okay. Can I read him Alabama?
Yeah, at least do.
If we can get German Swiss, we can
Alabama.
In Alabamese? This is Portuguese? I thought this was African.
He's Portuguese.
He's Portuguese. All right, let's find
Who's
out.
Who's Portuguese?
Brother Balanga. What? Just a paragraph in Alabama.
Just a paragraph in Alabama?
Just
a I don't think I can do Portuguese here.
Portuguese?
This one story of Brother Bull? I don't know how to do it. The Life and Legend of Brother Bull. Overture. 26. A good and fulfilling self and joyous life in an ever-changing world requires that you always remain open to more expansive ideas and opportunities without being limited by religious, spiritual, or philosophical creeds, conditions, or preconceived answers about life. So you are continually empowered and able to live the finest and fullest self ever along your personal, self-chosen life journey of creativity, enrichment, and joy. Your abiding self in life is to be lived at all times, for it is a practical guide for every circumstance and situation, and will always provide the right answer in accordance with your abiding self in life, right in quotes. Always do only as you are willing to do and speak eternally, and have others do and speak eternally to you. 27. There are no dogmas, commandments, ceremonies, or special teachings to follow, no initiation to pass through, and no signs or symbols to carry with you. Living an abiding self in life is complete in itself, and shows that to live eternal as an abiding being, you have an eternal self in life.
And have an
eternal self in life. Oh, I see. You must live that today. Set your loner body self and life aside. Brother Bull. Brother Bull as Dr. Baker was not, Brother Bowl as Dr. Baker was not really challenging those in authority, but those who abuse their authority, like the doctors in London and the religious authorities in Brother Bowl's life. When white men brought their Bible to Central Africa, black men had the land and their tribal customs. Then after teaching Africans to choose their eyes, close their eyes in faith and prayer, when they opened them again, black men had the Bible and new beliefs. But white men had all the land. In this atmosphere, Father Belonga, an ordained priest, taught and preached about the glory of God and the richness of life to all who attended his village church. Oh, he sought to help them and save their souls. It was unusual for an African to be a priest, but Father Belonga was. Well, he was a devoted follower of the church, a fine teacher and an inspiring speaker. And unlike the priests who preached in their grand churches and expected villagers to come to them, he constantly traveled throughout his assigned district ministering to his flock. Father Belonga challenged authority by being a fine and caring priest. He was truly trusted and honored and adored, and people believed in him. But through the years of devoted service and honestly offering the message and promise of his beloved church, Father Belonga gradually became discouraged. He felt discouraged and disappointed about the church he'd chosen to serve and offer to his people. And he also felt betrayed by other priests and his superiors, because they no longer portrayed the glory and faith and richness of God. Father Belonga had seen many priests take things from devout worshipers in the name of God, and then demand that believers, in order to serve their eternal souls, give them even more gifts and offering and service. It's kind of a con.
You don't think churches are a con?
Yeah, I noticed down on Lee Drive there's a new church on some prime real estate. That, I don't know if it's a Mormon church or something, it's huge. Anyway.
No, they rebuilt that. It took a long time.
Oh, okay.
On Ali'i, yeah.
Yeah.
If you're talking about on the main highway.
No, on Ali'i, it looked new. I didn't notice it before. Many villagers living in mud and grass huts with very little nourishing food and few comforts were frequently required to build grand houses and great church buildings for the priests and nuns, all in the name and glory of God. Yet the church gave back very little to those most in need.
Pause. Take a stretch break.
Oh, is there some coffee?
I made some. I'm not putting you to sleep, am I?
I am.
It's your melodious healing voice. Roger, any comments? Nope. That was funny though, wasn't it, Simone?
Which one?
Did I have to read another language's words? And I'm struggling with it.
I didn't do that connection.
Oh, I did. Because I was saying out there, it's like, I understand the difficulty, but I don't often stop to really worry about it or think about what it's like, the difficulties you guys go through. Yeah, so I was just in there struggling with all those. Okay. I got the experience too.
So say that, what were you doing? You were in here reading it in Alabamese and then translating it?
No, I don't know how to pronounce those Indian words.
Oh.
I'm used to speaking, you know, regular modern English American. I don't know. I mean, I know Seneca and words that are part of that lexicon, but I don't know some of these other words.
Yeah.
So names, words, challenge, difficulty.
Okay.
Humor for everybody else.
I don't want to hear you talk Alabama.
I did. Brother Bowen.
Half a sentence. My glasses.
It's not right. It's just not right or fair. It's got God's way. You want to hear that one?
Yeah.
Father Belonger frequently spoke against other priests' actions and demands. Though it wasn't really his concern. No. You don't want that. That's too much humor. We can do that after tonight.
Okay.
We'll do Southern Meeting. Yeah. I think we all know what God means by that.
We'll talk to you.
Hey, everybody.
British accent.
There you go.
What's up,
level? Okay, rolling. It's just not right or fair. It's not God's way, Father Belonger would. Father Belonger frequently spoke against the other priests' actions and demands, though it wasn't really his concern, because he offered faith and love and trust, and constantly worked to improve the villagers' daily lives. But he was troubled that their actions reflected personally on him, on his church, and on God. He felt that if people were ever to give their lives and souls to his Lord and to his faith, then he must be their completely trustworthy spiritual leader. And he had to be absolutely certain that whatever he preached and taught or promised in the name of the church would follow through and meet its obligations. One especially dark and dreary day, Father Belonger, visiting the bishop and other priests of his province, confronted them by asking, "What will you put up as a good faith offering to my flock? What will you give them? Will you provide a rich and fulfilling life, a healing of the body, happiness, food? What in good faith will you offer them?" He waited patiently, obediently for their reply. "Put up as a good faith offering," they laughed. "Surely you're not serious, Father. These people came to us to be saved. We're the church. They're here to serve us and fulfill our needs and desires. As God's messengers, we'll give them his word and his promise to save their eternal souls, and that's all." And the bishop added, "Now go back to your duties, Father. Let's hear no more of this." But it was impossible for Father Belonger to continue representing or working beside men with those attitudes, so he traveled to other villages in other areas. And in each instance, before going among the people to teach or preach or carry the word of God and his church, Father Belonger again asked the local priest, "What will you put up in good faith?"
They snickered?
Okay, they snickered loudly. "You ask that of us? What will we put up in good faith? We're God's word. We are God's servants, not their servants. And you dare ask that of us? Go away, Father. Take your demands elsewhere. We've no time for such foolishness, nor for you." And he was constantly advised to do penance and ask God's forgiveness for his irreverence and blasphemous words. Well, Father Belonger knew immediately that he couldn't represent people like that, so he again moved on to another village or town in another province. And he always asked what the local church and priest would put up in good faith, and he always received the same answer. Finally, despite many years of faithful service and devotion to his beloved church, Father Belonger, feeling his dreams quickly slipping away, yet also feeling profoundly renewed, suddenly defrocked himself. Oh, it was a deeply sad and disheartening, yet freeing day. Taking off his collar, Father Belonger renounced his vows to the church, declaring, "Oh, if I can't trust the other priests or the bishop or even the church, then I can no longer teach or counsel people in these ways. The church and priests demand unwavering faithfulness and riches from my people, but give little to ease their constant suffering. Oh, they're not to be trusted, and I'll no longer be one of them." It was a terrible day. It was a terrible, terrible day. And as Father Belonga defrocked himself and prepared to leave his ministry and his precious church, and the security and companionship of a few dedicated priests and many friends, he was heartbroken and grief-stricken, and almost overwhelmed by his loss. And he fell down on his knees and prayed and renewed his vows to God, saying, O precious Father, I will continue being your ever-faithful servant. I'll devote my life to doing your bidding alone, in whatever way you ask of me, but I can no longer represent those I can no longer respect and trust. And with a deep sigh of relief and conviction, and contentment and certainty and joy, for above all else he felt joyfully free, Father Belonga arose from his knees as Brother Belonga. Oh, he was a new man, reborn and revitalized, and eager to properly and faithfully serve his Lord and Master and lead his people to the promised land. Well, those were wonderful promises, were they not? And if anyone could ever fulfill them, Brother Belonga was certainly the one to do it. But he had a problem. Oh, such a terrible problem, because it was impossible for him to ask of God, as he'd done of the bishops and priests, Well, dear Lord, what will you put up as a good faith gift? How can I trust you? Oh, whatever would he do now? Well, it was quite a dilemma for Brother Belonga, though he preached his finest, counseled and helped those in need, and inspired and renewed many individuals, which led quite a few converts to believe in him and his God. And though he offered salvation and eternal life to all who listened, and asked everyone to trust him and his Lord and Master, he had nothing to show others of the good faith relationship between himself and his God. He had no real proof of God's love and caring. Oh, whatever would he do now? Well, Brother Bowl, as he was lovingly called by the villagers, despite his inner problems and anguish, continued his new ministry, traveling from village to village, settlement to settlement, teaching and earnestly praying with many people, and they were certainly uplifted. In each village, he brought his flock together and worked and worshiped with them and guided them, and promised them a richly renewed eternal life, and he helped them attain that. Oh, Brother Bowl was truly a man to be trusted, and he worked from dawn to well after dusk to meet his vow of properly serving his Lord and the people. And yet, well, he was still missing that good faith gift of richness from God that he sought and so desperately wanted for his people. Brother Bowl frequently spent morning prayers asking, Father, oh dear Father, am I not a good and faithful servant? I'm not really asking for so much, and not for myself. Oh, just a little good faith demonstration. That's all I want. Is that too much to ask for? But there was no answer. So Brother Bowl began each day just a little sadder, but he was determined to prove himself worthy. But soon, as he continually labored with the villagers, he began questioning his every feeling and motive and action. Maybe I'm not good enough. Surely I'm not disloyal or untrustworthy. Oh, certainly I have faults, but they're such little faults, and I try so hard, oh, so very hard. And my words inspire many and lead them to know you, dear Father. And my deeds, oh, my deeds in your name, Lord, have helped so many, oh, so many. Certainly, Lord, I must have gained some small worth in your eyes. Please grant your faithful servant this one little request. Oh, Brother Bowl prayed constantly, fervently, especially in the quiet, lonely evenings away from work and his flock. Brother Bowl tried desperately to understand his father's ways, and he only wanted a little show of good faith. It's a small enough thing to ask of one so great, he cried. Well, after many weeks of such prayers and receiving no answer, Brother Bull decided that maybe, just maybe, asking God for a good faith gift was expecting too much of him. So he would have to carry on with his own life without a good faith gift from his Lord. Sorry?
Good choice.
Oh, it certainly wasn't easy, so he continued pleading for a sign. Even a small sign would do, for he was sure, oh, he was very sure he'd recognize God's sign, because it would be something special, so very special indeed. But nothing special appeared to him. Everything was so, well, it was so commonplace, just ordinary. But still, he was certain he'd recognize God's sign, because it would be something special.
Also known as extraordinary?
Extraordinary. But nothing special appeared to him. Everything was just ordinary. Oh, there was no sign, so Brother Bull had to carry on with his life without a good faith offering from his Lord and Master. And it was very difficult, because every day he had to inspire his flock and strengthen their belief and trust in God. Oh, he would inspire them to God. He just had to. He couldn't fail them. He had promised. But he felt so terribly alone and unsupported. And though all of his own doubts and unfulfilled longings, and through all of his own doubts and unfulfilled longings, he managed to encourage them and quicken their spirits with his words. Believing his sign and assurance would certainly come to him, while faithfully helping others, Brother Bull, watching carefully, noticed that many who came to him were not only poor of spirit and in great need, they were also sick or hurt, and some were lame. But that wasn't so unusual in this harsh land. And Brother Bull sighed deeply, longingly, and prayed passionately. You know me well, dear Lord, if I could heal just one of them, oh, such a good faith sign that would be. Just one, dear Lord. Won't you give me that? Could I be allowed to heal just one person? Oh, I'd do it in your name, Blessed Father. Oh, I would. So everyone would certainly know you had such faith and trust in them that you let your own richness and wonderful ability come through me, your ever faithful servant, to heal them. And of course, they could put their trust in that, because I'd let them see you working through me. Oh, I'd reveal your face and actions to them and respect your words and promises. Truly I would, dear Lord. Well, it was a difficult and agonizing time for Brother Bull, because he so desperately wanted to heal others, and he tried and tried, but it was not forthcoming. Oh, he just couldn't heal people, and he felt so denied and forsaken. But why, dear Father? Why do you refuse me? Why have you forsaken me?
Why
can't I have an extraordinary sign of eternal self?
I just thought I'd add that. Brother Bull didn't feel he was challenging or testing God, and he didn't feel God was testing him by withholding what he desired most in life.
Of course not, no.
Good guy. But, well, how could he continue working and preaching and promising his flock the eternal self would protect them and heal them and give them what they earnestly prayed for, when though he's been faithful and prayed constantly, all he's asked for was withheld from him? Oh, he saw nothing extraordinary or even unusual in his life and ministry as a sign, and he certainly couldn't care for the sick or the lame. Brother Bull tried healing a desperately ill man who'd been a devoted follower all his life. Surely, Father, he deserves a healing hand. Oh, he so needs your touch. He prayed, but the man died. Then a premature baby died in his arms. A woman with a bad cough choked on her own blood when he tried to heal her. A blind boy screamed in terror and agony at his touch and remained blind. And the boy's brother, in a desperate fit, thrashed about on the ground, shrieking in fear, until he bit off the end of his tongue and fainted in pain. Oh, Brother Bull was so afraid to continue trying to heal, but he traveled from village to village, preaching and teaching about his Lord and Savior, and helping all he found near hand as best he could. One day, in a remote village, Brother Bowl met Master Omori, a wise spiritual teacher of the traditional African ways, who also traveled back trails helping and teaching the needy. Many called Omori a witch doctor, but Brother Bowl knew he was much greater than that. He even wondered whether he might be God's sign to him. But, well, he soon dismissed that idea, for though their encounter was brief, they immediately felt like kindred spirits, as anointed servants of God, though they served different gods. They were like two old friends, and maybe they were longtime companions and teachers. Who knows? Mm-hmm. Feeling at ease, Brother Bowl told Master Omori of his promise to serve in whatever way was asked of him. But he also complained. Well, just a little. But though he asked for a small good faith showing, he'd received nothing in return. Not a sign or an ability. And through all of this, Brother Bowl declared, I must gather the courage and strength needed to carry on alone and inspire others and help them, all the while knowing, in good faith, that, well, is there somewhere, yet to be discovered and given to me. It must be there. Master Omori, don't you think so? Oh, well, it must be there, but where? Will a sign ever be given to me? Have I done something wrong? What's wrong with me? Will I ever be able to heal others as you do? Master Omori waited patiently for his friend to stop weeping and lamenting his faith before answering. Now, dear friend, you're beginning to understand the true meaning of faith, are you not? And good faith, most of all. Bear in mind, brother, that whosoever saves his faith shall lose it, but whosoever loses his faith for the sake of another shall find it. Remember that, for you'll need that strength and courage and awareness in your life to gain what you hold most dear and to heal others. You must earnestly put that into your life. Praying is not enough. Remember this when the time comes to you. Remember my words and mind them well, for it will not be given to you until you give it to yourself. For you shall be as one of the angels sent to gather everything out of his kingdom that offends him. Then Omori sang a song he learned in the white man's church school, hoping the words and sound would strengthen Brother Bowl and lead him to his gloriously promised life. Oh, it was indeed strange for a witch doctor to sing such a song, but Brother Bowl gained so much joy and courage from his meeting with Master Omori that he saw this as his sign to continue faithfully and devotedly serving his Lord. But was it truly a sign? It seemed normal and natural to meet Omori in the villages.
What song was that, Whiskey?
I don't remember which one I chose.
For many months, Brother Bowl helped many villagers, and he constantly looked for an extraordinary sign from God. And though he frequently tried to heal the sick and the lame, he couldn't. He never lost his faith, nor the courage to carry on, because, well, Omori's words and song awakened him to his own faith and need to act upon that. Brother Bowl couldn't quite get the promises of Omori's song out of his mind or soul, and as he repeated these familiar words, he seemed to grow in strength and inspiration, and he followed his heart, though he still longed for a sign. And one day, just as Omori said, Brother Bowl met a small child along a dirt road leading to the capital of the province. It was a busy road, one used by many travelers passing through the area and by those carrying goods to market. There were many people on the road that day, but few stopped to hear Brother Bowl preach or sing his song of God's love. It was market day, and they rushed past, intent on their own business and purposes. And, well, maybe that's why he noticed a small child along the roadside. She'd been waiting many days for him to pass by, for this road was part of his regular route from town to town. The noise of the carts and excited chatter of people hadn't awakened her, nor had his preaching. But the moment he sang Omori's song, oh, she awoke with a start and began crawling toward his voice, following Brother Bowl's promise of God's love, for she had such an astounding faith to show him. The child crawled determinedly, slowly and painfully, because her legs were almost useless. She had been born that way. She crawled many miles to hear what Brother Bull had to say about God, about faith and courage, especially about blessings, and hopefully about healing. She struggled along the path from her village alone because being worthless in her family, worthless to her family, she had been renounced and thrown out of her father's hut and out of the village. They wouldn't keep her or feed her. She was denied and dispossessed, accused of being a bad omen to the family, to her family and village. They declared that her own sins caused her lameness and demons could take her. She was not to be forgiven or trusted, for hadn't her evil sins brought the poor crops and scarce hunting and the fire? Even the old men of the village council had never seen such a bad year. It was all her fault, they declared bitterly, with a tone of self-righteous judgment and finality. Unable to walk because one leg was short and weak and withered from disease, disuse, and withered and, sorry, unable to walk because one leg was short and weak and withered from disuse, and the other leg had deformed foot and badly twisted ankle, she was carried outside of the village and abandoned beside the trail to live or die. It mattered not, and no one would help her. No one even cared. And those who passed by, well, they seldom even looked twice at the filthy child crawling along the edge of the trail, though some did offer food and water. But beyond that, they wouldn't help her. She'd been discarded and forsaken in life to travel her path alone. And yet with all that, she seemed she'd not lost her faith in the promise and goodness in what life still had to offer her. Oh, this child had a wondrous inner spirit. And while her soul danced with joy and excitement, the child, her frail, deformed body, agonizing with effort, slowly pulled herself along to reach the road and find Brother Bull and see the wonderful God he always talked about. She just loved Brother Bull's voice, and she knew, oh, she just knew that he and his father would help her, and they would certainly heal her, for she had so much to do and be in life. Oh, she had faith in that, and her strength and faith grew stronger, never weakening or lessening, as she struggled through the terrible heat, following the nearly impossible trail. The child dragged herself along many torturous miles until Brother Bull saw her by the road, slowly, pleadingly crawling toward him out of the shadows. Maybe it was fortunate that few people stopped to listen that day, or he might have passed her by, for she was so very small and hard to see in the dense tangle of vines where she'd collapsed, and waited for him. She called weakly to Brother Bull from the shadows, begging to be healed, for she truly had faith and trust in him and his father. "Where's your father?" she asked weakly. "Is he with you?" "Oh, I don't see him. You promised you'd show him to me. Where is he?" "Oh, will you heal me, brother? Will he?" Sensing rather than hearing her pitiful cries, Brother Bull stopped singing and looked all about. Seeing her, he rushed over to pick her up, but then hesitated. "She's so frail, and certainly in great agony from such deep and dreadful sores," he moaned softly. "And yet she has so much faith and inner radiance. It seems each leaf and blade of grass tenderly moved her along her path." Well, it was a wondrous sight, and Brother Bull instantly wanted to help her. "Just this one, dear father. Oh, just grant me that, to ease her obvious suffering, as I promised you would do." And oh, seeing her useless legs being dragged along, he desperately wanted to heal her. "Just this one. Oh, please, grant me that." And with tears of agony and frustration streaming down his face, but with a tender, loving heart, he answered her pleas for help.
Jack it off.
But with a tender and loving heart, he answered her pleas for help and a healing by crying mournfully, "Oh, child, I cannot heal you. Oh, I've tried and tried and tried, but I cannot heal. I can't do it, child." And he quickly turned away in utter shame, so she would not see his unworthiness and disgrace, and lose her own faith, as he had done at that very moment. Oh, he knew I think it's three dots. Oh, he knew. Page 436, second paragraph, begin sentence. Three commas become three dots. Oh, he knew his father. Mm-hmm. Oh, he knew his father could instantly heal her, if he chose to do so. For Brother Bull had seen many wondrous things in his years of traveling and preaching. Oh, he was unwavering in that. But, well, he felt he couldn't heal her. He just couldn't do it. And he was, unfortunately, just as unwavering in that. Suddenly, hearing a strange cry overhead and feeling it must be God's answer, Brother Bull, listening intently and searching above the trees, discovered an eagle slowly circling high in the cloudless sky, soaring and rising, drifting and climbing. Is this my sign? He moaned softly. Oh, is it? Oh, Brother Bull was so fearful and uncertain, and he was so ashamed of his loss of faith that he cried out desperately and in agony to help this poor child. And it was as though his soul wept with him, as surely it did. He was so miserable and felt so lost, until suddenly, again, looking up at the fluttering of the great wings, he prayed softly, saying, Thy will, dear Father, let that be done. And at that moment, he felt a new inner courage and strength. And he whispered gently, speaking to himself and to his Father within, Why can I not have the faith to do this for you, Father, and for this poor, suffering child? Why can't I show you the trust and faith I have, that I've had all these years, and carry that to her? Oh, why can't I do that? And he heard a gentle voice within him saying, Oh, dear one, let me in, for I cannot do anything for you that you will not let me do through you. Hearing the splendid voice, Brother Bull quickly knelt down in the road, just where he'd been standing, and prayed, Father, oh dear Father, all these years I've asked you... I see why you guys can't get through this. For a good faith offering, I've said, give me the ability to heal, and I'll have trust and faith in thee. And it's taken all this time for me to understand that having faith and trust in thee gives me the ability to heal myself and others. Oh, what a fool I've been. But what a wondrous gift you've given me. Thank you, dear Father. Oh, thank you so much. You've blessed me so, Father. Thank you. Oh, it's just as Omori said. I must have faith, the very good faith. And he was so right. Oh, I'm so blessed. I do have the good faith. Oh, I do. I know that. I've had it all these years. Oh, what a waste. But no longer, Lord. No longer indeed. I see it all so clearly now. Then taking a deep breath, as though to inhale all the faith and the universe, Brother Bull rose from his prayer. Slowly at first, a little unsure and unsteady, but filled with good faith and trust and blessings, until finally he stood erect, taller than he ever stood before, and he was sure. Brother Bull closed his eyes and softly answered the wondrous voice within him. Yes, Father, I understand. I trust you. I know she needs me. Oh, yes, I have faith. I truly do. And he wept silently, joyously, and his face flowed with love and devotion and trust and his very good faith. Brother Bull was almost on fire with joy and ecstasy, and his faith and trust showed on him everywhere.
And all around him, can I ask you to do that a little bit? Thanks.
And all around him, and reached down, touching the child, for she crawled to him, he commanded her to stand. Is it as?
Yeah. When?
Okay. She hesitated, so he repeated himself, Stand up, child. I and the Father within me command you to stand. Oh, she looked at him with such great trust and courage and faith. She searched deeply within him and exclaimed,
Oh, thank you, dear brother. You brought your father for me. I see him. I do. Oh, yes, I do. He's here, and he's calling me. He's beckoning. But her voice suddenly trailed off as she put all her strength and courage into rising to take her father's hand. She reached for it. She stretched out her arm and grasped and caught onto Brother Bull's robe. She held it tightly and seemed to draw great strength from him. Oh, it was a wondrous moment, though she'd hardly moved, and her lips spoke a silent prayer. Finally, she began pulling herself up. She was beginning to rise, and to those who gathered around, it was more than a struggle to stand. And take her father's hand. It was a miracle and a joy, and there were excited whispers in the crowd, for many stopped to witness this wonder. Oh, at first they watched out of curiosity, but this miraculous sight held them transfixed. The lame girl pulled harder and harder, and her eyes pleaded with Brother Bull for help, but he resisted lifting her, for he knew that to be transformed and truly transformed in life, each one must lift themselves alone. They have to find the good faith and trust within themselves, much as he'd finally done. But oh, how he wanted so to help her, to lift her, to heal her. But he was healing the child by giving her the support and faith and courage and strength to rise above her inner and outer lameness and heal herself. And at that very moment, in her desperate struggle, the child was finally healing Brother Bull for all time. Oh, she pulled harder, and even as his robe began tearing and slipping, and she fell back, and her eyes pleaded for help, though her lips were again silent. Brother Bull looked wondrously at her struggles, and he gave her his courage and trust and his great strength, and of course his very good faith. He was fulfilling his great promise to her, to himself, and to his father. Brother Bull prayed silently to his God, but spoke loudly and lovingly to the frail child, fighting to stand up for the first time in her life. And the child struggled and pulled. Oh, she desperately wanted to stand up, but Brother Bull's robe tore again and slipped farther away from his shoulders and from her grasp, but she continued in agony and in joy, her dirty, bloodied hands clutching tightly and desperately to his robe. The crowd waited expectantly and softly chanted a prayer and swayed gently in rhythm. Suddenly, the child's withered leg, weak from years of disuse, unable to bear her weight, crumpled, and she fell to the ground and lay motionless. People pushed forward. They crowded closer to see the child lying at Brother Bull's feet. "Help her," someone commanded. "Pick up the poor child. Why is he just standing there? Doesn't he care? What's the matter with him? Oh, look at that suffering child. Help her, brother." Several people called, and as he looked up, they began chanting again. Louder this time, for they were giving her their strength and courage and protecting her spirit. Brother Bull had to resist, mightily. He had to resist the temptation to pick her up as they demanded of him. He used a greater faith and trust and inner knowing, and instead of picking her up, he looked at her sternly, and though there was a merciful kindness in his voice, he again commanded loudly, "Arise, child. Stand up. Your father calls you. Answer him." Those nearby, hearing his stern voice, gasped in disbelief. "Well, how awful. Doesn't he care at all? I should help her." The crowd chanted even louder and beat their feet in the dust, and the child cried weakly, "Oh, yes, father, I will. I will." She grasped tightly to Brother Bull's robe and pulled herself upward. Tears of joy and the strain of such tremendous effort streaked her dirty face, cleansed her countenance, and well, they washed her soul clean. The crowd waited and prayed for her. They chanted more urgently, but more quietly at what they were witnessing, and Brother Bull wept openly. Oh, it was so difficult for most of the people to watch the child's agonizing struggles yet they just couldn't turn away. And they too wept openly. It seemed that even the birds in the trees fell silent at her faith and effort. And everyone was transfixed as she pulled herself painfully up, Brother Bull's robe again. He hadn't moved or adjusted his garment, so her efforts caused it to tear away and slip further. Her lips moved constantly, though she uttered not a word. It was as if she were speaking to and hearing from someone within her, or within Brother Bull, as surely she was. Oh, her torn and bloodied hands reached higher. Her fingers dug deeply into the fabric, instantly tearing it again. And losing her grip, the child fell back, clinging desperately, the robe slowly slipped between her weakened fingers. Too exhausted to hold on, the child leaned heavily against Brother Bull, with both arms wrapped around one leg. It was a peculiar sensation, a wonderful feeling, that of such a small and needy child leaning so heavily upon him, holding on so tightly, yet, well, it wasn't a burden. It was such a joy and a pleasure. Regaining her balance and with a cry of trust, the child reached higher and slowly pulled herself upright, then higher and tighter until finally, with an everlasting effort, for the first time in her life, she stood erect. She would no longer need to crawl and drag herself along in life. For a long moment, the crowd, having suddenly stopped chanting, stood in silence and wonder at the sight of the little girl standing before Brother Bull. And her legs seemed strangely different. Oh, she was unsteady, but that was all right, for she was dancing in her wind. Someone gasped, another cried with happiness and relief, a few cheered, but not so loudly, because the sight had been too wondrous. Some began whispering in hushed tones, but whatever their reaction, everyone was overjoyed at what they'd witnessed. Everyone felt they'd been part of a true miracle that day, and maybe they had. The child nearly pulled Brother Bull's clothes completely off him. He was stripped almost naked, but he didn't care. He had hardly even noticed. Oh, truly, it didn't matter. For at that moment, he finally saw and understood that he was being given or shown the great good faith and trust he'd represented and offered to others for so long. And he understood that, for all those years, he truly labored in trust and faith, even without knowing, and certainly without having the symbol he wanted. And he never took anything for himself of what was given to him to help others, as the church and priests had done. At that moment, Brother Bull, nearly naked, his robe shredded and ripped from his shoulders, tears streaming down his face, supporting and holding tight to the frail little child in front of him, who was standing freely for the first time in her life, finally understood that faith was not so much for him to have. It's only for him to hold secure and reserve in trust for others, such that when they come to him, so desperately in their need, he could offer them that faith, courage, and strength. Well, after this wondrous event, this struggle, this healing, oh, this miracle, Master Omori stepped out of the crowd, and Brother Bull, standing half naked in the noon sun, smiling broadly through his tears of joy and thankfulness for his precious good faith gift, and holding the unsteady child tightly and lovingly, upon seeing him, exclaimed excitedly and happily, "Oh, look, Omori, it's just as you said, just as you promised. Isn't this wonderful? I healed her. Look, she's standing. Oh, what a wondrous day this is. Oh, I'm quite an individual, am I not?" And with that, the crowd begins singing an old tribal song of joy and celebration. "Oh, yes, indeed," Brother Omori called. "It's clear at last. You're truly an extraordinary individual. You are a wonder. You're the keeper of great richness and good faith possessions for others. Oh yes, you are strong. You are strong in your belief, and you're going to be trusted in all things, for you truly speak with the voice of God, and you've become His heart and soul, and hands, and certainly wear His robe well. And with this last comment, Amori almost laughed out aloud, but he managed to say, "Well done, brother. It's well done indeed." Master Amori smiled broadly at his dear friend's seeming embarrassment. "And do you now see and understand that on this very hot day, on this dusty little road, with this small child in such desperate need, your dear father has fulfilled his good faith promise to you, brother? Stand strong and steady in his hands and in his robe, just as you always have. But before, dear one, you were so afraid, so very afraid and unseeing." Then holding up his hand to ward off Brother Bull's protest, Master Amori turned, waved goodbye, and disappeared in the crowd that had gathered to witness and testify to Brother Bull's marvelous healing. And they again sang and danced in adoration of his good faith and his sign to them that they could trust their father. Well, after that miraculous day, Brother Bull might weaken and want to turn away from others' problems and difficulties, from their hurts and illnesses, or the fears and anguish they possessed. At the same time, the inner strength and richness nourished him well, just as it had done all those years upon the road, and seldom was there a fault in his actions, and he was no longer afraid, and he never took even 1 ounce, or particle, or small coin, or even a good faith gift for himself, for he always held everything in keeping for those who came in need, and he offered them everything he had. But Brother Bull, still not fully understanding matters, would sometimes pray, "But, Blessed Father, am I not your son and faithful servant, not also in need?" This entity did not realize that in changing from Father Belonga to Brother Bull, he had not changed himself. He had become an entirely different person with Father Belonga's memories. Is that right? This entity did not realize that in changing from Brother Belonga to Brother Bull, he had not changed himself. He had become an entirely different person with Father Belonga's memories. Yeah. Such that he didn't know he was an entirely new self with Father Belonga's memories. Brother Bull was an abiding individual. And in much the same way, we will show you exactly how to recreate or rebirth yourself as an abiding being, should you choose to do that. And in his prayers and in his life, Brother Bull clearly heard the Lord say, "Faithful one, you have a great deal to offer others. I will take care of you." Oh, those were the Lord's words as Brother Bull heard them. But Brother Bull protested, "If I have all that and hold it, why is none of it to be mine? And what more must I promise? What have I done so wrong, dear Lord? And what must I do to set things right?" And the beloved voice spoke again, "Trust, and I will be with you." And with these words and their enduring promise, the Lord's lovely voice left Brother Bull. But he left with the quiet assurance of returning whenever called upon, in gloriously trusting faith to help another. Well, dear ones, Brother Bull preached, "Faith and trust and joy and enrichment and well-being in life are yours to have in all things. They're yours to discover, to be, and to be part of, but only if you carry them and hold them in possession for another, and another, and another. For then you can draw upon all that richness, though not for yourself, but the same richness you offer to others will give you whatever you need to have, and it will always be part of you, should you ever call upon it. Do you understand? Call upon these things in such ways and manners that when you're involved with and concerned about another, one so obviously in need, someone like the small child at that moment, if you touch that person and say, 'Stand, I command you to stand,' they'll do just that, entrusting you and drawing everlasting strength from you. and from the Lord and Master or Mistress within you. And ever should you be in need or in need of healing, be not as I was, demanding good faith promises or miracles or cures from the Lord, but come to your Father with trust and good faith, just as the lame child did. And when asked to give up your attitude of hurt and illness, well, stand up, truly stand up, for the first time in your life, just as the wearily suffering child did. Oh, dear one, it might be a struggle, and you might feel like weeping, but do not cry out in pain and anguish, or turn away, or plead to be relieved of your fears and labors. But like the little child, cry out in joy and blessedness in what you are doing. And if necessary, strip away the clothes, the masks, and appearances that conceal the true, trusting, and rich self that is you. Be not afraid, and no matter your circumstances, see the richness and goodness and well-being that surges through you and all around you, and stand up and do whatever is asked of you. Oh, dear one, the full and everlasting goodness and richness and joy of life is the Lord's promise to you, just as it is to me, but it's received only by offering your love and trust and good faith to others. Do you see?
In the name of God.
Powerful story, huh?
Yeah. I'm glad you guys put that one in there. Ending on page 444. Mm-hmm. What is four? Infancy, new beginnings? In the promise cards?
Oh.
Triple infancy, new beginnings.
Oh, I need to know about the promise card. I wonder
if that's what it's
called.
It's a deep subject.
So if I'm messing around there and distracting you.
No.
I discovered that I lost my email that allows us to check in for our flight.
Mm.
Just gone. So I will call them back to you.
Each one had like a pole writing on it. Then there was a book that went with it. It was extended. Each card took a 2-page writing and shrunk it down to what? It basically just gave a section of it. Small bit.
Okay, so the cards were a section of the book. Okay. And was it more than numbers? Do you like your other symbols?
Based on the I Ching. Roger, you wrote the I Ching.
Oh, okay. That's
and took all the duality out of it.
Yeah.
Was the idea.
Yeah.
Okay. So it uses a system that works.
So Roger's I Ching.
Yeah, it uses a system that works, but it was more appropriate to, well, instead of you have to be ready for what life is offering kind of stuff, when the time is right, then you can do it. It was always a life thing.